Welcome back to my channel for another episode of Pornstar Confessions. Today I'm super excited. I've got the absolute legendary Max Connor. Welcome.
Hi.
Okay. So usually I would ask people how they got started in the industry, but with your story, I want to start at like the very, very beginning, because you've kind of got a timeline going with this shit.
Yeah. It's been a while.
So, like, let's start, like, growing up, because you've got an interesting background.
Yeah. So, I was born in Clinton, Maryland. I was raised in Albany, Georgia. I come from a very, very religious family. You know, where I'm from, you go to school and church, and that's about it. So when I was 14 years old, I describe it as an experience. I was watching, some Christian channel, TBN or some shit like that. And I had this experience where I kind of concluded that I was called to be a preacher. So I went and ran and told my mom, and I started seminary. And I was ordained as a minister when I was 14 years old, and became a pastor by the time I was 16.
I didn't even know that was possible.
Yeah.
What?
It is. You get a certificate or whatever from the church. At the time, I was ordained in the Baptist church, and then I moved over to the Pentecostal church.
Okay. What inspired the move?
You know, it was weird. I think I had a friend that was going to this, it was a tiny, tiny church, like storefront church. And I just remember the first time I went there, like the pastor had all of these like awesome, innovative ideas, and it wasn't the standard traditional Baptist, you know, type of view, and I kind of fell in love with that. And then I started to go every Sunday, so I started leaving the church where I was, you know, a youth pastor at, to go to this church. And then I convinced my parents to come with me one Sunday, and then they fell in love with it and ended up switching over. So we all ended up switching over to this church together. Yeah, and that was, I was pretty much there until I decided that I was going to go off to school in New York.
Damn. Does faith still play a role in your life to this day, or?
I mean, kind of, sort of. I usually tell people that nowadays I believe in my pillow. You know, if I go to sleep at night and I can go to sleep with a clear conscience and knowing that I did some good and I wasn't bad to anyone, or, you know, then I'm fine. So, yeah.
Okay. So basically, you just try to be the best man you can possibly be.
Yes.
And admire the man you see in the mirror.
Yes, absolutely.
It's a good way of looking at it.
Yeah.
So, So you went to college in New York, right?
Yeah.
And what
inspired, I went to,
what inspired that?
So all throughout high school in general, I was that type of student that like played around for most of the time. And then when it was time for like grades and stuff to come out, I would buckle down and try to push through with a C or a low B. And so I didn't really have any plans for after high school. And when I was in about, I believe it was 10th grade, I joined the drama club. And I fell in love with it. I started doing little plays and things like that and started getting, you know, the little community theater awards and thespian awards and stuff. And I was really good at it, shockingly. And so my drama teacher one day handed me this pamphlet for this school, the American Musical and Dramatic Academy. And I was like, oh, you know what? I never thought that I could actually do this as a profession. And so this school was holding auditions in Atlanta, which was about 2.5 hours away from Albany, 3 hours away from Albany. And they were starting their first spring semester. And I think they were auditioning nationwide, and they were letting 200 new students in. And so I took this pamphlet to my parents, and I was like, I think I want to audition for this school. Apprehensively, they drove me to Atlanta. I did this audition, and later found out I got accepted. Oh. And so you also have to keep in mind, where I come from, people don't go off to school. You literally graduate high school, get married, have children, work a job for the rest of your life, and go to church. You know, nobody really leaves. Yeah. So when I got accepted into this school and decided I was going to go, they wrote it up in the newspaper, and, you know, because I was going so far away from my family to go to theater school. And nobody really does that. But that's how I ended up going. My parents packed my stuff up. They drove me to New York from Albany, which is like a day drive. And I started my life in New York. And let me tell you, when I got to New York, it was like a whole different world. I was definitely a very naive young boy. And, you know, picking up my life from this very, what's the word I'm looking for?
Sheltered?
Sheltered, very sheltered life to go to New York and figure shit out on my own.
So why were your parents, I'm guessing your parents were apprehensive because most people think of theater as like, it's kind of like a liberal arts degree. Like, what the fuck are you going to do with that? Was that the reason?
I think it was a mixture of both. I think to this day, they still don't understand. Because, again, they live in a bubble. They live in Albany, Georgia. They don't really go out and explore the world and know what's going out outside of their own little bubbles. So, like, you know, it was hard for them to comprehend concepts like Broadway, off-Broadway, television, you know? Like, even to this day, when I did have a Broadway show or off-Broadway show, and I would ask my parents to come, they never really understood the importance of me asking them to come and how big of a deal it was. Like, the last off-Broadway show I did, I invited them, and they were just acting so nonchalant, but I was like, you know what, just don't come. It's fine. It's fine. It's whatever. So I think it was a mixture of them not really seeing it as a real career, and also me, like, leaving and being so far away from home.
Yeah. So, what's your relationship with them like now?
I mean, it's good. We're in that weird place where there's... I'm finally making them understand that I'm a grown-ass man. And, you know, I did have a really big conversation with them a few months ago because, you know, they were complaining, oh, you don't call every day and all this stuff. And, you know, I've always had a really rocky relationship with my father. And so, you know, I kind of had a deep conversation with them, explained to them why I don't call them every day, where I'm at as far as, like, being an adult, evaluating my relationship with my parents. And I think it was a really good conversation. I also finally told them in that conversation that I am a porn star and I do porn. And they took it way better than I thought they would.
So you just told them that?
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, whenever I would travel and stuff, they thought I was going on an acting gig.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. My sister knew. But that was the only person who knew.
Wow.
Yeah, but now they know.
I can't
And
believe
they're
you kept
like,
that
hey,
from
as long
him,
as you're
though.
safe and you're paying your bills. I was like, oh, wasn't expecting that response. Okay.
All right. I mean, Joe Blow, porn star, I could understand being able to keep it under wraps. But with you, I'm really surprised that somebody didn't mention it to him at the grocery store or something.
I was shocked too. I was expecting that, but I mean, if somebody did tell them that they were like really good keeping it a secret from me that they knew.
Okay.
So
So, when did you come out as gay, or when do you realize you were gay?
definitely when I moved to New York to go to school. So for like I think my first semester, I was dating this really beautiful girl. She was South African. Her name was Sarah Jenny Kulele Sibiti. She was absolutely beautiful. But there was also okay, so I didn't just go to New York to theater school. I went to New York for musical theater school. So as you could imagine, I was like immersed and surrounded by gay boys.
Wow.
And it was the first time that had ever happened because in Albany, Georgia, I think I may have seen a gay person, an out gay person, once. You heard about gay people, you knew about gay people, certainly coming from the church. You know, I heard about homosexuality, but I had never seen it.
Yeah.
And so it was such like just like a culture shock to come to New York and be at this musical theater school and see all these gay people. But I think what really intrigued me was there was this one boy at the school who I kind of just came to the conclusion I had a big crush on. He was this short, cute little Italian ball of spiciness. And I don't know, he just did something to me. And so I remember the first time that I kind of like had my sexual encounter with him. It was my first sexual encounter with another man. And the first thing he told me was, he was like, you know, you're probably not going to have a lot of sex. I was like, what do you mean? He was like, well, a lot of normal gay men like normal sized dicks. I was like, oh no. So basically, I started bottoming at school because I just figured it would be easier. And I was making my way through that school and having the time of my life. I still wasn't calling myself gay. I was still with my girlfriend at the time. But then I guess she kind of sensed it because my wardrobe started to change slowly. And I was really became one of like the biggest femme bottoms you ever seen. I was just like, oh, this is this gay shit. Let me live my life. Let me sow some oats, you know? I was in it, baby. And so she started, I guess, dating some other guy behind my back. This other guy was a really handsome straight guy that was in this. So there are two programs at the school. There was the integrated program and the studio program. The integrated program was musical theater, and the studio program was acting. And so all the straight boys were in the studio program. And so he was from the studio program, and I guess they had started dating. This guy's actually really famous now. He's in a lot of. He's a Marvel character in the Marvel movies. Let's put it like as that, and so that's who she left me for, and then I think in my third semester at school is when I finally decided, okay, I'm gay, and to this day my parents still fault me because I didn't tell them like face to face. I sent them an email telling them that I was gay. And that's just because when I came out and during my gay self-discovery, I felt like I had a lot of people to let down. I was the pastor of a church. I came from a very religious family. So not only, I wasn't thinking, that I'm only putting myself in a bad predicament, but I also thought this could put my family in a bad predicament as well. And I was young, so I was scared, and I sent them an email.
Yeah. Understandable. I mean, I can argue both sides of that. I don't think either one of you is right or either one of you is wrong. It just is what it is.
So, but you know, even then, it was to the fact, last time you came home, you had those tight pants. We knew something was up, and it was basically come down to we already knew. And I was like, well, if y'all knew, why didn't you tell me?
Okay, so how old are you now?
38.
What? That's not old.
In gay years.
No. Plus, the daddy thing is super in. Give it a few more years and you'll rock that shit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So, was that the first time in your life that you found out that you were well endowed? Your first gay experience that you're talking about?
No, because you know I kind of took it with a grain of salt.
Oh, I don't think guy's blowing smoke up my ass.
Yeah. I don't think I really kind of realized it until I started doing this.
Oh, wow.
When you have multiple, you know, masses of people telling you, that's a nice penis, you know? To this day, I still think I just have an average, normal dick. I just know how to use it. You know?
So, one thing I'm sure you're more than happy to talk about, and from what I've seen over the years, you're very passionate about, is race. And one of the parts I wanted to talk about with that is, I'm really surprised that a lot of those guys topped you when you were in school. Because one complaint I've heard of a lot of, like, bigger, very masculine looking guys, and it makes it 10 times worse if they're black, is if they do want to bottom, like everyone else is like, no, you're gonna fuck me. Do you ever experience that?
Not then. I mean, now I do, yeah, but not then. I think I didn't because of a few different factors. I think I was just too young for that type of thinking to, like, set in yet. But also, when you're in a school of thespians, we kind of have... Thespians usually tend to have a bigger view of things, if that makes sense. Not too quick to put things in a box.
Yes.
So then, no. Now, I definitely experienced that,
No, it just... I'm curious, like, what your thoughts are on that. Because I remember I used to have this... client, older, very handsome, very masculine black guy, and he was telling me about this dude that, you know, he was going on a couple of dates with, really liked him. I'm like, have you told him that you're bottom? He's like, no. I'm like, just so you know, he's assuming you're a top, because he's putting you in that box. And lo and behold, they're both bottoms in it. I'm just like, dude, what the fuck?
Yeah. I think that the whole BBC premise, the fetishization of black men. If I'm honest, I think it's definitely all learned behavior. And it comes from several years of just having wrong ideals about these things. And I think there are certain things that perpetuate these ideas, like studio porn. And even now, even in like the work that I see from content creators, you know, there are those, you have the white guys who use the BBC fetish to make money. You have the white guys who only film with other white guys. There are several guys. I just got a message, I think last month, from this guy that I film with, who was like, hey, so I'm supposed to have like this threesome with these two content creators, but I really want to see you again. And so one of the guys that was supposed to come pulled out. And I wanted to see if you were up to me bringing up that maybe you can take his spot. I was like, sure, whatever. And so he messaged the guys, and he sent me a screenshot of what the guy responded. And the guy was like, oh, don't take this the wrong way, but I don't think he has high enough engagement. And so I sent a message to this model, and I was just like, first of all, I was like, you know, you guys are too stuck up on this engagement thing, because you're talking about I don't have enough engagement, but not to sound cocky, you're working to try to get where I'm at. I've been there. I've done that, you know? I was like, I don't care if I don't have 4 million views on a video. I'm still making more money than you. Oh. Just to be honest and fair and, you know, put it out. But then I started thinking about it, right? Oh, shit. I started thinking about it, and I told the model who had asked them, I was like, you know what? I think that they're kind of lying about the engagement thing. Because, like, I'm looking at their page now, and I think the point is they just don't want to work with me because I'm black. And then the model was like, you know what? I think you're absolutely right on that. I was thinking that too. He was like, I don't even want to work with them now. So he didn't end up working with them either. But you know, it's little things like that. I encounter it all the time where people don't want to film with me because, you know, I'm a black man, or they expect for you to fulfill some sort of fetishized fantasy. I've had models that I've filmed with who put out the content, and in their caption has BBC and stuff like that. And I contact him and say, hey, look, I'm not going to publish this video. You can do whatever you want to do with it. But I feel like I'm at a point now where people should understand or at least have some sort of idea of what I stand for and what I don't stand for. And like, it's 2023. There's no reason why we should be describing people as BBC, you know. Same thing goes around. I'm not going to describe anybody as a BWC, you know, because that's a human being, and it's more than that. And like, you know, even now when I do my content creation, I don't look for numbers. I don't look for engagement. I look to see if you're a decent human being, and if you're not going to give me any drama after we're done working. All of those things take into account for me. Because at the end of the day, if you film with somebody and have a genuine connection with that person, or you do, like, I feel like that video and the chemistry behind that video is going to speak for itself. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's just I know I'm getting off topic into something else, but the whole engagement numbers thing really fucks with my mind, because I think it's so fucking stupid. Because I hate now when I go on to social media, all I see for the most part is I can see people who I know hate each other on screen making porn. And I'm just like, you can't stand this person. But numbers have put so many people into so many compromised situations. Mm-hmm. because of numbers. I hate numbers, but at the same time, sometimes I kind of get it because, you know, it is an oversaturated industry now. Everybody and their mama is doing it. And, you know, even when I mentor people, I try not to so much mentor people with the whole numbers theory. My whole theory when I'm mentoring people is humanizing your brand. Yeah. I always tell people, it's like, people subscribe to you for dick and ass. But your brand has to be more than dick and ass. Yeah. For longevity. There's always going to be a better dick. There's always going to be a better ass. Your ass is going to get old, tired. People are going to get tired of looking at it. But if you show people that you are a decent human being, I have people who are subscribed to my accounts who don't watch my porn at all. Yep. They like me as a human being, and they want to support me, and they want to see me succeed. Yep. So getting back to the question, yes, I definitely do see that type of behavior today, and it's the thing that I've been fighting against since I've started. Now, because of the content that I create, which is a very diverse brand of content, I do get a lot of flack from my own community. A lot of people from my community have called me a coon, a Uncle Tom. They say I don't fuck black men, which is not true. So, you know, sometimes it's a little disheartening for me because since I started this, I wanted to do this as a strong black man who did this by not kissing anyone's ass, but by being a professional, strong black performer. Yeah. And I wanted to open up avenues for other black performers. And I wanted to be an activist. I wanted to be a voice against some of the things that I saw in the industry and didn't agree with. So while I've been doing that, and I've never stopped doing that, it's also disheartening sometimes because, you know, the pushback that I've received since starting this has not been from white people or people who they tell me should be the enemy. The pushback has been from people who look like me. Which is definitely a problem because, and you know, I can understand it. You know, I know my people, I know black people, and it's like, if you don't do it the way that we need you to do it, if we think you should do it, then you're doing it wrong and you should just stop. You know what I'm saying? But at the same time, it has been kind of hard, especially I remember I did, back when I first started Max Connor, I did a video with this Asian porn company, and it was an Avengers parody movie. And I played T'Challa. And this boy that I had my scene with, he was dressed up as Iron Man. He was Iron Man. And before the video came out, I think they released like a soft trailer or something of it. Somebody immediately took the video and cropped it. So all you could see was my face and these little white legs flailing up around my face. And I said when I was coming, Wakanda forever. It was totally on brand. It was never scripted. Nobody told me to say it. It was just in the heat of the moment. It was actually so in the heat of the moment that everyone on set just instantly started cracking up. The cameraman lost the shot, so he actually had to like reshoot some of the color shot because everyone totally lost it. So anyway, somebody cropped the video and posted it so it would be out of context. And this video has lived with me for the past 5 years. A lot of black people was like, how dare you say Wakanda forever while you're fucking somebody who isn't a black man and all this stuff. And you know, that was the point where, having suffered through some of the comments I had saw from black people, that was the point where I remember so clearly. I was in LA at my house in Santa Monica, and I was just so overwhelmed when I saw that they had done that, I walked outside and I was standing in the middle of the street and I was just crying and sobbing because I was like, you know, I tried to be a source of inspiration for, you know, my community as far as this industry goes, and to get this backlash. And then, you know, I pulled myself together. I walked back into the house. I sat down in front of my camera and I recorded myself. And, you know, I made a video and I told them, you know, I don't want you to think that this is an apology video. Because first, I don't think I did anything wrong. Because you people are trying to drag me for quoting an entire fictional place from an entirely fictional story that has nothing to do with your culture. It has nothing to do with you being black. And I was like, I don't apologize for doing what I did because I don't feel like I did anything wrong. But I said, I do apologize to you if it offended you because my intention is never to offend anyone. And every year, somebody posts this video out of pocket just to start trouble. And I've learned how to just ignore it because I was like, I've already explained this to you guys. I'm not going to explain it every time you feel like you're going to call me up to you know, speak for myself on this. And, you know, every time they post, it's like, oh, Max, you ain't got nothing to say. No, I have nothing to say because I've already said what I had to say. And I was like, first of all, you people are miserable. You keep these videos in your phone for years, just so waiting for the right opportune time to use them. That's not sane. Second of all, it's like you're trying to make it seem like I'm such a bad person, or that I'm a coon, or that I'm an Uncle Tom, and this is the only thing that you have to use against me. Two videos. There's another video. I want to talk about that one. But they have two videos that they use against me all the time. I was like, you need to get some new receipts. If I'm such a horrible person, get some new receipts. What stupid shit have I done this year? Not 5 years ago. Not 10 years ago. There's a video from like 10, 12 years ago that they started using, which is, you know, we can talk about it. So I did a video with my really, really good friend. You might know him. I'm not going to mention his name because he still feels bad that this video was put out and that people used it against me. It kind of put a damper on our relationship just because he was embarrassed and ashamed. And I keep telling him, listen, it's okay, but... My friend, who was a content creator, about 10 years ago, when neither one of us were content creators, we made a video. It was a video specifically made for his new boyfriend. So his boyfriend wasn't open to being in an open relationship. But he knew that his boyfriend and I were really good friends. And he trusted me. And so he was like, he went away to do an acting gig. And he was like, yeah, if you guys want to play around and stuff, that's totally fine. But he was like, can you record it for me so I can, like, watch it? And I was like, sure, I'm down for that. And so we did a video. My friend is Mexican. And in the video, apparently, he said, yes, nigga. In the video. You can bleep that out if you want to. Okay. and about maybe 3 or 4 years ago, people started posting that saying that I support race play. And when that video came out, you know, I always hold myself accountable for stuff. So when they started posting that video, I was like, first of all, he definitely did say. At first, when somebody said something about it, I was like, what are you talking about? I've never done that. This is crazy. And then they posted the clip from the video, and I was like, oh. So what happened was, apparently, once he did start doing content creation, he didn't have that much content, so he decided to post that old video of us. I don't think he really edited that well. But, you know, I told people, I was like, first of all, I don't know why I allowed him to say that. First of all, I was young. I had probably smoked 3 blunts before. And he was my best friend. So him saying that didn't alarm me probably as much as someone who I didn't know it would have alarmed me. But at the same token, I was like, it happened. There's no excuse I can give. It shouldn't have happened. But that was 10 years ago. Did you hear anybody call me that in my videos this year? Did you hear anybody call me that in my videos last year? The year before that? Have you ever heard anybody in any of my videos say that? Because this was even before I started MaxConnit. So it's like, I'm holding myself accountable for some stupid shit that I allowed to happen 10 years ago when I was in my late 20s. Okay? And that's it. They use those 2 videos every year. People post them out of pocket. So I think some guy the other day who has talked about a lot of black content creators and who has a lot of people wanting to like have a piece of his neck. Post the Wakanda Forever video. Somebody said, hey guys, what do you guys say during sex? And he quote tweets the video with the Wakanda Forever video. I was like, first of all, this is so out of pocket. Like, why am I running through your head at 6 o'clock in the morning? And then I was like, but karma is a bitch. Because he posted that 2 days ago. And yesterday, he got dragged all over Twitter for some shit that he said and did. And I was like, karma is so amazing. Not gonna say I was happy to see it, but I was happy to see it. Yeah, so they use those 2 videos to try to make it seem like that I'm against the community, I'm a self-hating black man and all this stuff. And I was like, I don't know what else to tell you. I've been black since the day I started this. I've been black since the day I popped out my mama's cooch. And that's not going to change. I'm a very proud black man. But what I won't do is I won't just make content exclusively with black people. I think that's fighting fire with fire. I think that there is beautifulness in diversity and inclusivity. And I think that diversity and inclusivity should be shown, should be celebrated in our industry, because that's the only thing that's going to change years and years and years and years of changing the lack of diversity within studio porn and now in amateur content creation as well.
Yeah, I mean, one of my favorite quotes, and you'll like this, is you will never have a hater who is doing better than you. It's impossible.
Yeah, absolutely.
It just doesn't happen. And absolutely. What you said, though, about your own community, that breaks my heart, because every single black performer I've interviewed has said the exact same thing. Every single
one. Yeah. Well, no. I always say, so, you know, every new black performer that pops up, I try to make sure that I get into their DMs or at least post on their page if I see them, you know, just to give them some encouragement, because I know what's going to happen. If they are, so, you know, there are what I call urban content creators who they have a certain aesthetic. They only film with black people. Their videos have a certain aesthetic that works for them. That's totally fine. But there are some black content creators like me who does live in the world of diversity. And then they you know, they fuck anybody. I always tell people, like, good ass is good ass. Black, white, yellow, whatever. It's good, it's good. It never fails. They can fuck 50 black men. As soon as they put their dick, let somebody put their dick in them that isn't black, then they're a coon, and Black Gay Twitter is trying to slay them down. not drag, slay them, cut their head off. And, you know, and they either, one, come to me to ask me about it, or I see them post on Twitter about it, about them being harassed for this or that. And, you know, my response is always, welcome to the club. I was like, I guarantee you right now, every black porn star or every black porn model who has fucked someone who is not black, they've been called a coon. They've been called a coon. They've been called Uncle Tom. And that's just the way how social media works now. And, you know, it used to be back in the day, you were innocent until proven guilty. Now, because of social media, somebody can go on social media and write a complete lie about you.
Yep.
A complete lie. And they can have instant gratification.
Yep.
Because people, I have a theory. It's my theory. It's my opinion. I believe that human beings are addicted to hatred. They're addicted to hatred. They're addicted to anger. Point in case, I can go online and see somebody write the most beautiful thing about me and just keep swiping on by and say, oh, that's nice. But I can spend 5 days reveling in the one bad thing somebody said about me. And there are certain people online who have found that that there's a community of people who will praise them and they will become popular for slandering and harassing other humans. And to be a porn model, you have to have a very thick skin. And you, especially if you're looking to be popular, and if you're looking to make money, I never did this to be popular. It just kind of happened. I just wanted to pay my bills. But, you know, if you get to a point like where I'm at and stuff like that, people are going to talk about you. And that's 50% of the time is not going to be good. And you kind of have to have a very deep understanding of who you are. Right. Because if not, these people can make you believe that you're someone you're not. They can send you on a suicidal path. They can completely fuck up your mental health. So you kind of have to have a strong, strong, stable ground to stand on. And that's also why I created the House of Connor, which we're about to start doing more with House of Connor in the new year. But I want to transfer House of Connor from being a management company, because there's really no need for that anymore, especially with like content creation and stuff now. So I'm trying to transition House of Connor into an educational spot where models can come. First of all, I want it to be a safe place for models of color. That's why I named it House of Connor, like, you know, the houses in the ballroom scene. I want it to be a safe place where you can make mistakes, get support from your peers, get educational resources, whether it be workshops, whether it be sitting down with a professional to talk about, you know, certain things. Have workshops on budgeting, marketing, branding, planning. You know, I've seen a lot of black black porn models who've done this for 12 years and they stop and have nothing to show for it. You know, and so being a black porn model in this industry is hard, because you can, especially if you're a black porn model who doesn't exclusively film with black people, it's hard because you can sometimes kind of feel like, okay, I don't necessarily, of course, have a home within the white community. But then also sometimes you feel shunned from your own community too. And so you kind of feel stuck in between. And that can be a lonely place. And I want to have resources there for those models. Because, you know, I don't know if a lot of people understand this. A lot of models reach out to me for various reasons, for various things. And it hurts to see them going through the same turmoil that I went through. I've kind of learned how to deal with it, because I'm like, okay, I'm not going anywhere, so I have to learn how to deal with this.
Yeah.
But for some boys who aren't expecting it, or who already have like a low self-esteem or things, it can be extremely hard.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's a different content, but it's the same process. And you've also been very open about this as well on Twitter. Is for me personally, and I'm sure you know some recent examples, I've been crucified before for shooting with trans people or shooting with women. Like, oh, I got a real problem with the fact that you're bi, blah, blah, blah. Like, they just, like you said, they just want to cut your fucking head off.
I get the same thing too. Somebody, they tried to crucify me about a month ago because it's like, oh, you know, you're a bisexual. Look at all these trans men that you shot with and blah, blah, blah. I was like, what's your point? First of all, I never told any of y'all motherfuckers that I was gay. You assumed. Second of all, I never told you I was bi. I never told you what I was because I ain't put myself in no box. I'm not gonna lie to you. If I see a pussy, can I say these words on here?
Yeah.
If I see a pussy and I say, I think I might want to fuck that pussy. Because you tell me I can't, you think I'm not?
Yep. Yeah, no, exactly.
Second of all, here's the thing that I always tell models too. You can't get too mad when these people start blasting you for certain stuff because, look, on my behalf, as far as me goes, all these people, I'm like, you can't cancel me. I have built something that's bigger than your cancellation. I have people who know who I am. That's the big part about humanizing your brand as well. Because when people start listing all these lies about you and posting all of this out of context stuff about you, your fans know who you are. You show them that every day that you are the opposite of what these people are saying about you. But the other thing is, I always say you can't cancel what you never ordered. I can't go to a restaurant and say I want to cancel a meal that I never even purchased.
Interesting.
And so my thing is, most of these people who talk about us don't pay for our porn. Mm-hmm. And if you don't pay my bills, your opinion, I can give two flying fucks about. You are a pimple on my ass. Pop, move on.
Yeah, no, and that is also... And I think that you, especially of a lot of people, have the ability to speak on this. Is, like you said, a lot of people are obsessed with engagement and numbers and awards and all that shit. And I think you're especially qualified to speak on this because you've won XBiz, Gavian, you've won everything. And I don't know, I just, for me personally, I care about the zeros.
Exactly.
Like,
and let me tell you right now. And now, one of those, I have 6 gay VNs, 2 XBiz awards, about 5 or 6 Grabbies, some flesh bots. None of those awards have added any zeros to my salary. They just sit on the shelf, collect a little dust, because I never clean those things. Yeah, and, you know, it's award season now, and I see people bribing people to vote for them. Oh, vote for me. I'll give you a free month of OnlyFans and blah, 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 blah. And I'm just like, I understand that it's nice to be acknowledged for the work that you've done, but don't make it your main goal, your sole purpose. You know, yeah. With all the awards that I've won, I can always, you know, feel legitimized. But I still would have done what I did without the awards. Yeah. You know, I think the whole thing, especially for me, my motto is, you've probably heard me say it in a type, but my motto is, be kind to yourself. Be kind to others, and always remember to smile. And I think in doing that, what made me successful is that, you know, I don't want to sound like I'm bragging, but I'm not a bad person. I'm a very chill person. I love to see people happy. I love to make people laugh. So, you know, when I go to set for a studio porn, I take that same energy. I want to have fun. I want to conversate. It's like a family reunion for me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I think that I worked the way that I worked is because I don't even know if I was the best option for half of the shit that I did. But it's just because people enjoyed having me around and I enjoyed being there and they know I'm going to come and do what I'm supposed to do,
yeah,
get my check and leave. And there's no drama. So I think the numbers thing has caused so much discourse. And, you know, I often tell my friends, I miss the times when I started OnlyFans, it just, like, really started. There were only a few porn people on there. And it was just so fun. We were just having sex. And you'll throw a camera up. Half the time, you didn't even know if you were recording what you were supposed to be recording. It was just fun. And you happened to make a lot of money with it. And then it became popular and it kind of evolved and changed. And I think that I personally don't think it evolved and changed for the better. It turned it like OnlyFans became famous because people got to see their favorite porn stars have real sex.
Yeah.
And then it kind of transitioned to like half of the time, these people that they watch now don't even like each other, you know, but they're making porn. So I think it's become to a more commercialized thing. And the numbers thing, again, I'm not going to name names, but the numbers thing started to come up when there were a few select content creators who came in about, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, who were very adamant that studio porn is bad and this content creation thing is a new way to go. Even though they were kind of turning the content creation thing into a studio format. I remember I went and shot with one guy, and I was like, I need a paycheck after this. I feel like I just left a Falcon set. You know, stand here. Then at this point, you're going to do this. And then you're going to climb up on the wall at this point. And then I was like, can we just fuck? I promise I'm good at it. I don't need all this direction. You know? But I think the numbers thing came into play. And, you know, again, this is my opinion. Take it with a grain of salt if you want to. I think numbers became a play when we started getting content creators who joined the industry, who had marketing background and things like that. And they implemented those concepts, those marketing ideas into this world. Which I get it. But at the same time, it kind of transitions it into something that it wasn't, you know?
Yeah.
OnlyFans became famous because people got to see real sex. It wasn't fabricated. It was authentic. And it just, you know, when I started seeing pizza delivery guys on OnlyFans, I was like, oh, God, what are we doing? Again, I keep getting off topic. The numbers thing, I think, started with a few content creators who, in my opinion, know or knew that a lot of these guys would not be physically attracted to them and make content with them. So they started using this numbers thing as in, oh, look how much numbers I have. I can make you a star. If you film with me, I can get you X amount of followers and blah, 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 blah. And it just became this big thing. But now what I'm finding is a lot of these boys are just popular, broke people. They're popular and they're broke. You know, you're proclaiming from the rafters, I have hundreds of thousands of followers. But then you need somebody to cash out you money so you can get something to eat. So the math is not mathing. But, you know, there is this, I don't know how dirty you want to go in this interview. I could name names, but I'm not. So there was this content creator. There is this content creator who I heard from several people who I film with that he was telling them not to film with me because my engagement on social media isn't high enough.
What?
Okay. And this wasn't...
Hold on. Let me ask a question here, because... As far as I know, the two black performers with the biggest following in the world is you and Raheem. No one else does
this
more.
This person isn't black.
No, I know, but the point is, like, motherfucker, you're like, gay black porn star. If your engagement is shitty, I don't know who has good engagement. That's what I'm asking.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. But for a content creator who only makes content with boys who are like 21 and under, it's a very gullible story.
Yep,
to tell.
I know exactly who you're talking about.
Yeah. And when I first found out, I wasn't angry. I was hurt because from the first day this content creator came on the scene, I was so supportive. He would message me and ask me questions. At one point, I asked if he wanted to film a scene with me. But he was like, I'm a little too intimidated to do that right now. And all that stuff. And I was like, that's fine. I was so supportive of him. So when I found this out, I was just like, but why would you do that? And so I reached out. And I asked if we could talk. He didn't have time. He knew exactly what I was calling about. He knew exactly what I was calling about, but he was playing stupid. And he didn't have time. And so then, about a month later, I heard that he was still doing it. And so I went to Twitter and I made a very long post. And I said everything I could say without saying his name, but everyone knew exactly who I was talking about. That was the funny part. Everyone knew who I was talking about. And when I made that post, the next day he reached out and said, oh, I'm sorry, I have time now if you want to talk. I was like, no. I gave you a whole month to talk. I came to you like a grown-ass man and asked that we talk about this. I didn't make it public. I didn't scream and shout. I came to you. It was just generally what I do. If you ever see me call someone out on Twitter...
I haven't.
No, I have. I'm not asking if you've ever have. I'm saying if you ever see me call someone on Twitter, it's after I've personally reached out to that person first and tried to have a conversation with that person. I'm not one to run to Twitter to put to air out dirty laundry. That doesn't settle anything. If I have a problem with you, I handle it the grown person way and I'll take you to court. So, you know, so I had reached out to him. He didn't want to talk. I heard he was still talking about me. So then I felt like, okay, well, it's just time for me to go and do this. And as soon as I did that, that's when he wanted to talk. But I was like, no. The time for talking is over now. I asked you to talk about it. And, you know, it's quite interesting now that my engagement is higher than this individual's engagement. So I wonder what he's telling people now, what story is now that he's telling people not to film me. But I was like, first of all, sir, you're a white man. I am no competition to you. Yeah. We are in two separate different arenas. You know, yes, I do fuck a lot of twinks. So we might have the same model base or whatever. But it's like, I'm still no competition to you. And that's the other thing. There have been a lot of content creators that have done a lot of shitty stuff against me. And I've had my altercations with people. Just to give you an idea of what I've had to deal with, I've had content creators offering money to individuals to send DCMA reports against my Twitter account. I've had models tell people not to film with me for various reasons or another. I've had models texting me from different numbers, trying to get information. There's been a lot of stuff. I have a whole bunch of receipts. People say, "Why don't you call these people out?" And I was like, "Because nothing's gonna come of it." But I will write a nice book when I retire, and have those receipts in there. But there's a lot of stuff that I've had to endure over the past 6 years, and it's all because and there was one person who you may or may not have named, who. One person or two who have okay, let me take it back. When I came into this industry, I looked up to the black greats that came before me. I to me, Cutler X, Champ Robinson, those are my blueprints. Those are my legacies. But now, because of the whole content creation, there's just a whole different attitude in these boys. And they come in and say, "Okay, I want to be the next big black thing. Who do I need to be?" And unfortunately, there's a very large target on my back. Not from everyone. These are select few, content creators. But I believe that the whole numbers and the followers and all this stuff, it's created an atmosphere that has made content creation in general very cutthroat, and very deceptive, and yeah.
Yeah, we won't name him, but I know exactly who you're talking about. Like, exactly. As soon there's one thing he said where I'm like, yep. And for what it's worth, this is now like my 110th episode. I have not heard one single person say anything negative about you at all. If anything, I've heard praise.
Again, like these are very few select individuals who, for some reason, just I promise you, I have not done anything to these people, but be me. And they just don't like me. I can be cocky. And sometimes when I take a picture of myself or something, I look at the picture, I was like, "Damn, now I get why." But I don't go the cocky route. I'm just like, I don't understand. But again, it always really hurts me. It doesn't really make me mad. It just hurts me because these are people who came out in the past few years who I really supported and found out that they weren't on the same lane as I was, as far as that goes. So,
So, how did you get started in the industry?
right. So I originally started, I think, back in 2007 or 2008, under a completely different name. I was a 100% bottom. I was a twink. Right out of college, and I did it for about a year, and then I went on, like I stopped doing it. I did some acting things. I did a tour for a couple of years, and then I started working at Starbucks and became a manager at Starbucks. And my goal was to become a regional manager, and I decided that I was just gonna manage Starbucks for a career. And I think it was at a point where I got sent to my first store by myself. And I was there for about 5 or 6 months. I was at Starbucks for like 6 years. But I was there at that store for 5 or 6 months. Sounds like, I didn't leave my family and pay all this tuition to go to school to be a manager at Starbucks. It was great money. Starbucks was a really great company at the time. But I was like, this isn't what I came here to do. or else I can be back home with my nephews and my family. So I left and I started acting again. That's when I got into it, because before I was mainly a theater performer. But after I left Starbucks, I started doing more television. And then it was in the winter of 2017. I had just got done doing a pilot for ABC, I'm sorry. It was a pilot. It was called Salamander. And I thought we were going to get picked up. You know, I started making plans to move back to the house in Santa Monica. And then I found out that we didn't get picked up. And I was at the point where I was like, okay, I'm getting older. I'm tired of having, like, my dream job for 6 months, and then when that contract is over, I don't know what's coming next. I wanted stability. And so I started doing webcams. And I didn't show my face, and I did it under the name of XL Top. And I did that for a little while, and I saw how people were responding, and I started to notice that people responded to me more when I didn't have my clothes on. And so I went to my partner at the time, my partner of 14 years, and I was like, listen, I think I want to do porn again. And he was like, what are you talking about? I was like, no. I was like, you know, when I did it last time, I just needed money to pay my rent. I was a broke actor. I just needed some sort of way to make it by. And I wasn't really serious about it, but I was like, I think I can really make this work if I try it now as a man, like a grown man. And so I finally got him to agree. And I opened up my OnlyFans and my Just For Fans, and I started posting up my old videos that I had recorded just laying around in my phone. And then two porn studios shortly after contacted me, wanting me to make my first studio scene with them. And at one point they were going back and forth, oh, they'll pay you this, we'll pay you that. You know, and I end up going with the highest paying gig. Oh. And it all just went from there.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. We had some fans submitted a question, but I believe one of the questions was tied to your physique. Because your physique, like, you're fucking yoked out of your mind. But you had mentioned when you did porn previously that you were a twink. So how did you go from being a twink to beast mode?
Yeah, so it's a very interesting story. So around 2010, I started struggling with the drug addiction. I was addicted to meth for about 2.5 to 3 years. It snuck up on me. The first time I did, I didn't even know what it was. I was with a daddy and some other boy that I wanted to fuck. And it pulled out this pipe and started smoking. And I was just like, what is that? They was like, oh, try it. And I tried it. And then, you know, I'll go back and see them like once a month. And once a month turned into, you know, once a week. And then it turned into every day. And then before you know it, I was in it. And then one day, I didn't go to any, like, program or anything. I just woke up one day, and I was just like, I looked at myself in the mirror. And I was very vain at the time. And I was just like, oh, girl, this is not it. You look like a skeleton, you know? And so I picked up all my stuff. I moved from New York. I moved to Connecticut with my family. I stayed there for a few months until I felt like I was ready to come back. I stopped associating with everyone that I associated with before then. And just started anew. And one of my, I guess, one of my vices towards my recovery was working out. I joined the gym for the first time. The first gym that I joined was a very popular bodybuilder gym in New York. So when I first started learning how to work out, you know, I was learning from, like, these huge-ass pro bodybuilders. So I got big really, really quick, natural, just because of the atmosphere I was introduced to fitness in. And I never stopped. So to this day, it's kind of like my happy place, you know? I'm still all natural. I don't take any steroids or anything. I am a little smaller than I was earlier this year. And that's just because, you know, I was taking creatine and stuff for a really long time, and I stopped taking everything. So now all I do is do protein. So I am a little bit smaller. I don't think it's muscle-wise smaller, but I'm just, like, got a little more compact. I'm not, like, you know, this anymore. But, yeah, that's how I got to the body.
Uh-huh. So
because before I started working out, I was like 110 pounds soaking wet.
Yeah. You basically replaced one addiction with another.
Basically. But I think this is more, I don't really call it an addiction. I think it used to be. I think definitely it used to be, because there were times where I would go to the gym 6-7 days a week, twice a day. Now I only go 4 times a week for like a few hours.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right. So, are you dating anyone right now?
I am not. So, I left my relationship 14 years, about maybe 3 or 4 years ago. Not on bad terms. I just, you know, I met him when I was 21. And he's 30 years older than me. So I kind of spent my childhood, my fun years with him. And so, we came to a point where I was just like, are you happy? And he was like, yeah. I was like, no, not happy because you're comfortable, you know, happy, like genuinely happy. And I just told him, I was like, I started dating you when I was a child. And we built a life together, a very wonderful life, because my ex is very wealthy. And so, you know, I had a wonderful life. But I was just like, you know, I'm a grown man. There are certain things I don't know how to do on my own because you've always done it for me. There's so much that I haven't experienced that I want to experience. And I think it's best, like, you go, maybe try to find someone that's your own age. Maybe you have more stuff to talk about. And I should go try to, you know, see if I can connect with somebody that's my age, that's in the same circumstances I'm in, you know? I'm definitely, you know, doing well financially. But, you know, I don't make $4, $5, $6 million a year. So we're in different brackets like that. And I was like, so maybe I should go and try to see if there's somebody that I can connect with that has the same struggles that I have. Yeah. That, you know, we're more financially equally yoked, yeah. You know? To this day, I don't know if I made the right decision, but I made a decision and I'm here. He still stays at our apartment downtown, and I'm at the apartment up here. The apartment that I'm at uptown in Harlem, originally I got it just to film in. But then when we separated, I moved on in here and started my new life. So I am single as fuck. I have dated. But what I found out is that... because I was in a relationship since I was 21, I was in that relationship until like my mid-30s. I don't really have that much experience in the dating world. I think maybe I could be a little awkward at some points.
That's endearing. But
also,
though,
a lot of people my age are only looking for the next best dick. And I see people who are in relationships for 1 year, or not even 1 year. And just like, I don't want to play house. Like, I want a partner. And I'm willing to be single until, you know, I find that. right now, I'm at the point, though, it's just like, just send me somebody that I can talk to and get to know that's actually sane. But I am talking to someone. I don't want to say his name because I don't know if he wants anybody to know yet. But it's nothing official, but I'll give a hint. We did a collab together maybe about a month and a half, 2 months ago.
Okay.
I flew him in. I ended up extending his plane ticket so he could stay longer. And ever since he's came, we've talked on the phone at least 6 times a day.
Wow. Okay. You have a funny way of not naming names, but no, I know exactly every person who you're talking about.
Absolutely. You know, I drop hints. I drop good hints.
Okay. So, all right. Yeah, no, my second question was going to be, like, how has porn affected your dating life? But with that person, it's not an issue.
Yeah, not an issue. And I always tell him when I have a collab, and he really appreciates that I'm open with him about that. He's actually to the point where he's kind of over it. The whole content creating thing.
Yeah.
But he's still very, very, easygoing about it, which is good.
Yeah.
He knows his work. Cause one thing a lot of people might know about me, I'm not a very sexual person. I don't really do hookups or anything like that. So outside of work, I don't really have a lot of sex.
Okay.
And I think I started calling myself a demisexual. Yeah. It's just like I'm attracted to, like, I don't know.
You need a connection.
I think I'm attracted to people that I know.
Yeah.
You know, I have some sort of connection with. Every time I try to hook up, it's just like after the hookup, I'm just like, I could have done without that. I could have watched some Netflix and beat my meat and ate a whole meal and had more enjoyment, you know? But, you know, having said that, I do enjoy what I do.
So I'm curious, when did that change for you? Because I'm the same way. Like, when I was in my early 20s, oh, I'd fuck anything and everything that moved.
Yeah, yeah.
But now, outside of work, the only person I want to have sex with is my partner. Like, the idea of the brand, just like,
yeah. You know, at one point I thought it was just because I'm getting older, but I see people who are a lot older than me that are still, you know, going strong. So I was like, I guess I can't blame it on age. I mean, subconsciously, I do know that being a sex worker and being a porn star, especially being a well-known porn star, I think it does subconsciously affect your attitude or your general feelings about sex. That's why I usually take breaks. Like, I don't know if you've ever noticed, but sometimes I'll go on Twitter and I'll be like, all right, guys, I'm going to take some time, a mental break, and in those breaks, I do a bunch of mental assessing, mentally, physically, all of the above, just so I can, you know, stay grounded. And I definitely do think that, you know, doing what I do has had some effect on it.
That makes a lot of sense. I think that I would say for most of the people I've interviewed that doing porn has affected their sex drive outside of porn.
Mm-hmm.
It's just inevitable for most people.
Yeah.
So, one person wanted to know what happened to Phoenix Fellington and Robbie Dash.
Okay, I saw this question. A lot of people ask me about this. I'm going to be totally honest with y'all, okay? I'm not going to say I'm not going to name his name because we already named him. We're talking about Felix Felton. All right. First of all, I don't know why people keep asking me where Phoenix is. Because I don't fuck with Phoenix like that. because there's this whole big thing with Noir Mail. And he and another model wanted me to do this whole boycott of Noir Mail. And I didn't agree to go into this boycott with them because I was like, Noir Mail hasn't done anything to me. They haven't done anything racist towards me. I go to set, I do my job, I get my check, and I leave. So I didn't join into that, and so he kind of stopped talking to me after that, and the other model kind of stopped talking to me after that. They even went so far as to join the coon line and start calling me the coon and the Uncle Tom with the rest of the people, even though they worked with the same white boys and the same white companies I worked for. They were somehow elevated above that. And then this is when I say make it make sense, this is what I mean. So after you call me, this is not Phoenix, this is the other model. After you call me a coon, you go work for a black fetishized company. So you want to call out Noir Mail, and you want to call me a coon, but then you go work for Blacks on Boys. Make it make sense. I've never worked for Blacks on Boys, and I never will work for Blacks on Boys, because I don't work for that type of fetishized content. Anyway, but again, if anybody watching this, I don't want you to say, hey, I work for Blacks on Boys and Max Connor says I run for that. I'm not saying that at all. You work for who you want to work for. This is my opinion and my own, you know, ground to stand on. I'm never going to look at anybody that goes work for Blacks on Boys and say, oh, look at you, you know. I just thought it was funny in this instance because of what had transpired before.
Okay.
So, long story short, I was really, I considered myself to be really good friends with him. We did a Noir Mail scene together, and I don't know, at some point, it just kind of fell off. So, that was a long story to say, I don't know where Phoenix is. Phoenix and I don't talk to each other. I wish him all the best. I think he's still on Twitter. I think he just has a different Twitter name. And I don't know what that name is. But I think he's still on there. If for some reason... I know this person who asked the... Well, I don't know him, but I know who this person is that asked the question. And if I happen to see him on my Twitter, and I see his Twitter handle, I would definitely send it to you. But I don't know where he is. Robbie Dash, I did one scene with him. I really don't know who he is or anything about him. We never followed each other on social media, so I don't know. I don't know what happened to him as well. Again, this is why the House of Connor concept is so important to me, because you have a lot of black, you know, stars who people love who do this and disappear one way or another without anything to show for it, you know.
So someone asked why you...
And I also want to make this clear. I don't talk to Phoenix. We haven't talked in a long time. We have had our differences. But I'm not trying to say I dislike Phoenix or I have some gripe with Phoenix. We just don't talk anymore. That relationship grew apart and I don't know where he is. But if I see him, I'll let him know.
So someone asked why you stopped bottoming, but you bottomed very recently, so...
Yeah, so I recently made my Max Counter bottom debut. It took me a long time to come to the conclusion that I was going to do it, but I decided that I was going to start opening myself up again to sexual exploration and getting back to things that used to, you know, make me happy. I stopped bottoming. I think it was just because of trauma from my drug addiction. So when I stopped doing meth, that's when I stopped bottoming. Gotcha. I think just because it took me back to those places and that space that I was in. And I had to wait until I felt like I was mentally strong enough to not feel like that.
So it's not an issue for you anymore then?
I don't think so. Like, I did the scene just fine. Well, not just fine. You know, it's been a while since anything has been back there. So, you know, I had to get back into the swing of it, but we made a really hot video. It's done really well. It's done amazing. It's the most well-received video that I've made probably since I started. So now my only fear is that I hope people don't like me more as a bottom than they do a top, because I'm definitely not turning into a bottom. But I'm definitely opening to showing more sides of myself.
Okay. All right. And someone wants to know, what was it like working with Colton Reese and Beau Butler for that scene in Tales from the Locker Room 2?
Oh, that was fun. That was my first time ever meeting Beau Butler face to face. And me and Colton, we just kind of had, like, I don't know, it's just good energy between us. At the time, you know, it was funny too, because I had met Colton a few times before, and I never would have thought that we would have had, like, I don't know what you call it, good bro top energy together on set, but we did. It was really fun. We did that with Shishi, and Shishi was always fun to work with. So I mean, it was a really fun time. I don't know, did that scene get nominated for anything? I have no clue if it did or not, but yeah, it was fine.
Uh-huh. All right. What is your perfect first date?
My perfect first date is probably going to a restaurant to get some food. Home dinner, you know, anything where I can sit down and actually talk and have a conversation with you. So things like the movies and stuff like that, I don't think that's good for me on the first day. I need to, like, get to know who you are. Because I don't want to, you know, do a whole bunch of stuff where we really don't get to interact. And then, you know, 4 or 5 dates down the line, I finally get to understand who you are, and I was like, oh my god, you're a piece of shit. I don't want to see, you know. Then I've wasted 4 or 5 dates.
Yeah, no, I agree. 100%.
I want to know you're a piece of shit on the first date. I want you to know if you think I'm a piece of shit on the first date.
Okay. Let's see. Did you ever think about doing porn as a teenager growing up?
No. As a teenager growing up, it was all about God and church and trying to graduate school.
Let's see. Age you had sex for the first time?
Goodness. I think I was like 17 or 18. It was in the back of a red Honda Civic. I can't remember that girl's name, but yeah.
Okay. Oh, here's an interesting one. Name a twink you would bottom for. Is there one?
I don't know. I can't think of one right now.
All right. And then, let's see. How does pussy feel different from anal sex?
Like pussy, like a female? Yeah. So I think the biggest difference is when you're fucking a man and you have a dick of a certain size, your dick kind of hits. I call it the second hole.
Yep.
I found out there are some gay men who are totally against calling it a second hole. I don't care what you call it. There's a point that you hit where you go into something else. that pussy does not have. I think that's a big difference in the lubrication factor.
Yeah. Agreed. Apparently a lot of people want to see us shoot together.
Okay. I saw that.
Yeah, I would totally be down. So,
well, let's do it.
All right. Okay. We'll talk after. Okay. And then this next question, because one thing I wanted to give you an opportunity to like plug your own content. So we'll talk about the rest of it later. But I feel like this question, let me find it. Oh shit, where'd it go? Basically it was talking about, yeah, I feel like this ties into your House of Connor, so I wanted you to talk about that. The question is, ask him if representation in the industry is instrumental in him starting his own management company and how he plans to use his influence and racism in the industry, as well as the stigma of black men in the industry being fetishized into thug porn.
Yeah, it was definitely an influence. I believe that studio porn is not as diversified as it could be. There are periods where you think that it's starting to change, but then it goes back to where it was. Like when the whole Black Lives Movement stuff happened, you saw a lot of companies trying to, like, you know, get black models into their studios. That's when I signed with my studio. You know, I believe when I signed with my studio, I was the first black model that had been signed in at least 10 years. Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't think it's getting better. I've heard a lot of promises. I've heard a lot of empty promises. And I think it's because, you know, studios, if they continue to lose money, they'll figure this out. But, they don't make content that they don't think that the people who pay their subscription prices want to see. But at the same time, those people who pay the subscription prices have been trained by you on what they should see. So if you have trained them that porn is beautiful with beautiful white men, you can also train them that porn is beautiful with a diverse range of men. Key in point is, there was a movie that was just made, and I thought very hard before I posted my thoughts on this because I knew that I would probably be putting myself in a bad or weird situation if I said something, but of course I had to say something if I'm going to stand for what I stand for. There's this company who recently did a movie in Africa. They went to South Africa and did not cast one dark-skinned black person in the movie at all. And so when I saw the preview, I was really confused and angry by it. And I made a post and posted up on my social media. I was like, so how do you go to Africa to film a porn movie and not have one single black person in the movie. They did have a biracial person in the movie, and they come out with the poster for the movie, and they put the one person who had any color in them, not in the center of the photo, but all the way on the side. And, you know, someone reached out to me and was like, we're sorry, there's not really an excuse, but we tried really hard. A lot of the locals here weren't ready to be in the studio porn, so we didn't know what else to do. And I was like, then you cancel the movie. Or you put it somewhere else. And I think a big problem with at least with studio right now is that they use the excuse, oh, black people don't apply to us. Or when we ask black people, they don't want to work with us and blah, 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 blah. And I was like, well, you've created an atmosphere in which is so unwelcoming for anyone that's not all-American white boy. The people don't, black people don't want to come and work for you because they feel like you're going to take advantage of them and you're not going to pay them what everyone's going to pay. I know for a fact I don't get paid what some of these white boys are getting paid. And, you know, I have the awards. I have the name, the brand, and I hear a voice who get paid more than me, you know? So, you know, a lot of people call me a token, but in the right, I guess you can call me a token because I am one of the black boys who they deem is okay to use and work with. But at the same time, it's like, I still get the shit end of the stick.
Yeah.
And, you know, so they use the fact that, oh, they're not coming to us. And so I'm like, yeah, but you're not actively looking for men of color. Yeah. Not like you actively look for people who are not of color.
Yeah, why don't they reach out to them on Twitter? I can think of tons of
them. At one point, I had a studio saying, we want to work with House of Conor, and you can send... You know, when I started House of Conor, all the studios were like, oh, yeah, any help you need, and blah, 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 blah. But when we launched, it was crickets. I sent Cocky Boys, mostly my whole roster. They wanted none of them. The one model that they did hire was somebody who I just decided to help out, who wasn't signed to House of Conor at all, and who was a white man. That was the one person that they did hire. So, I think there's a lot of tiptoeing around the issue in the studio. There's a lot of people making empty promises, saying that they want to make things better, who really aren't there to make things better at all. And it sucks. But on the other side, studios aren't doing that great right now. And if you notice, a lot of studio porn, you keep seeing the same models over and over again in every movie. Because they live either in LA or Vegas or in the area. They're not really paying to fly people out anymore, especially if your rate is a rate like mine. You know what I'm saying? If you're getting paid what you're supposed to be getting paid, they're not going to fly you out and pay that. And, you know, just because I don't think they have the money anymore, it's because they're stuck and they need to evolve. I think these porn studios need to have... a diversity and inclusion, and a diversity and exclusivity, like a consultant to like tell you, on a, like this studio that went to Africa and filmed this movie with no black people in it should have had somebody on staff to say, wait, this isn't good.
You don't even need to be having green marketing. No, that's not good.
Yeah, but they still spent money on it and released it. Well, it made me so bad. There was one model in the trailer for the movie. It was like, so how do you like Africa? He's like, oh, I thought it was going to be like The Lion King. I was like, girl, shut it down. Shut it down. That is not what you... Y'all should have edited that out. Yeah, but to answer this question, bigotry and black skin and brown skin not being seen or not being viewed as marketable in this industry is very much present. And if you were to ask me 4 years ago if I thought it was changing or if it could change, I would say yes. Asking me now, I don't think it's changing. I don't think that the people who are saying that they want change have any intentions on actually making that change. And I think it's because, a lot of people in my community complain about, not having a seat at the table or having to have a seat at the table. And so I was like, we have to find a way to create our own table. But in creating that table, I don't think it should be just our table. You know what I'm saying? I want to see a table where everybody can just have a seat and break bread. And I hope that can happen, but look, it took hundreds of years for the studio industry to get where it is. It's going to take hundreds of years for it to get out of it, if they want to. But I've been made so many promises, and those promises just don't hold up.
I've been biting my tongue for the last few minutes of you talking, because one thing that just drives me crazy, and I know you've seen it on Twitter, there's a whole lot of performers that will preach about body positivity or inclusivity or Black Lives Matter, this and that. But then you look at their content and it looks like a fucking Hitler youth rally. And I'm like, seriously, fuck you, dude. Fuck you. You say all this pretty shit, but I'm looking at your content and you ain't practicing what you preach at all.
At all. And it's really getting bad in the content creation world because you have those boys who only film with white boys. They say I only film with white boys. That's not true. I film with a very diverse group of people. But there's the white boys who only film with other white boys. There are some content creators who aren't white, whose interactions with them I've had make me think, oh, this person doesn't want to work with me because I'm black. And then I hear from another content creator, yeah, they don't really fuck with black people. It's like, okay, that makes sense. I get it. I got it. And they call it preference. Let me tell you something. Preference to me, there is no color preference as far as sex goes. Somebody tells me I prefer white, or I prefer black, or I prefer this. I think you're a bigot. That comes to my head. Because first of all, a preference is a preference. I prefer chicken. But if you put steak in front of me, I'm going to fucking eat it. Okay? That's a preference. Okay? But to say I cannot have sexual intercourse with somebody, I cannot have cannot start a life with somebody, I can't have children with this person, I can't be emotionally attached to this person, or I can't be physically attracted to this person because of the color of their skin. That's not preference. You're a bigot, and you're hiding behind preference. Preference based on race.
That's
And I know, okay, these are names that I can't name because I don't give a fuck. There's this one content creator, Peyote or something, his name is, I think the last name is Peyote or Peyote, something like that. Complete racist. I don't know why anybody hasn't called him out yet, but I've been scheduled to film with models who are supposed to film with him, and because I film with them, he'll tell him, oh no, I can't film with you because you film with a black guy.
Seriously.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's very rampant, as people call it preference, but I'm like, it goes so far beyond preference. But I can't call these people out or say anything because then the black community were like, oh, you're so stressed about getting up on that white guy. And I'm just like, it's not even that, you know? You can't you can't get the point I'm trying to make without trying to make me seem like a coon today. We got it. You think I'm a coon. I understand it. I'm whatever you say that I want to be, but this is a very important thing that I'm trying to say.
Yeah. So. No, it's just, it's sad because I would say the vast majority of people aren't racist, but when you encounter someone who genuinely is, it's like, the fuck? Mm-hmm. What?
Well, you know, I have different categories for people. I have racists, and then there are people who just do and say racist shit. Okay. And it's like, you're bigots, you know what I'm saying? A lot of people are trying to clump all of this up into racism, but you know, sometimes somebody's just a bigot. Sometimes somebody's just an ignorant asshole. Sometimes somebody will say some racist, stupid-ass shit. But I know deep down inside that, you know,
believe the shit they're saying.
Exactly. I think it's a mixture of all different kinds of things, but that's definitely something that has transferred from studio over into to porn world. I know several content creators who probably don't know this, but have been blacklisted from doing studio porn because they say, oh, I only want to work with a white person, or I want to work with Europeans, things like that. And so the director sent out a text to all of us, the whole studio and the model, saying that this person is not allowed and never can work for this studio because we don't tolerate this. So, you know, the studios, they'll do stuff like that. But then what they put in front of the camera doesn't match up to, you know, so.
Yeah, no, it's...
And, you know, it's hard for me because I try to be vocal about this stuff, but I also try to do it from a place where people don't feel like I'm attacking them. I'm just stating the fact. It doesn't mean I dislike you. Doesn't mean I'm trying to start war with you. I'm just stating something that's obvious and clear. And that's why I like having relationships with people. That's why, like, you know, Shishi LaRue, for example. I use her. Shishi LaRue. Like, I like Shishi as a person. Shishi has always made me feel comfortable. Shishi has always made me feel great and has been very supportive. But I would like to think if Shishi LaRue did something stupid, I can go and say, hey, what you did was stupid. And then Shishi is not going to take offense to it and be like, oh, now you're my enemy.
Yeah.
This is like, no, this is friends talking, girl. What you did was slow as fuck.
Yeah.
You know? So, you know, sometimes when I talk about this stuff, you know, I have to face the point, oh, maybe I'm going to fuck up my career if I do this. But then I'm just like, somebody has to.
Yeah.
Has to, you know? So, thankfully, I'm still here. But
yeah, no, I get it. So, what are your hobbies? What do you like to do in your free time?
I definitely like to write. I do a lot of singing. Gym. And being with my little baby boy. My doggy. I'm very much a homebody. I like to sit in the house and chill, watch TV.
What kind of dog is Paxton?
A Cavapoo.
A what?
Cavapoo. So he's a mix between a King Charles Cavalier and a poodle.
Oh, okay. How old is he?
He's a year old. He turned a year old in July 16.
Okay. So, would you say you're more introverted then?
I always tell people that I don't qualify myself as introverted. I'm just an observer, if that makes sense. Like, a lot of people, a lot of my friends call me an introvert because, like, if we go out or something, I'm kind of quiet. But Sam, I'm telling us, like, I'm not quiet because I'm introverted and I don't want to conversate or I'm shy. And I was like, I'm quiet because I'm observing my surroundings.
Oh.
I feel like I can be a lot more outspoken when I go out, but I also feel like that my friends could be a lot more, cooled out when they go, because I'm like, sometimes they get themselves into situations because they jump in it and don't observe the situation they're in. They're just like, oh my God, look at me, I'm left the party. Where I'm like, yeah.
So you're just kind of more quiet and just do your own thing.
Yeah, observe it. Now, if I know you, you'll get tired of me. Because I'm going to act crazy and talk your fucking head off. If I don't know you, I'm observing.
Okay. So what does the future look like for you 5, 10, 20 years from now?
This is a good question. So I'm at the point now where I'm trying to decide if I'm going to start transitioning everything so that I can do a lot more for the industry behind the camera. I think as far as my activism goes, I can be able to like, I can do a lot more activism effectively once I've decided to go behind the camera. Just because I won't have that weird thing of being honest and speaking on things that I think need to be spoken on, but also worried about how this will affect my career type of deal, if I feel like it should be said, I'm still going to say about I won't have that stress of wondering if what I just said is the hilltop I'll be buried on or not. I definitely see House of Connor in full swing. At some point I want to go get my pilot license. I just don't know if I'm going to like head towards being a commercial pilot as a next career choice, or if it's just something I want to have there just in case. I will say that I'm working on something really big next year. Which could potentially force me to go behind the camera a lot more. I can't really speak too much on it, but I'm working on a really big project with myself and another model that everyone I think really loves. A studio has somewhat agreed to fund us and back us. So I'm really excited about that. And it is in correlation with House of Connor.
Okay.
Just to give you a hint, House of Connor eventually will be House of Connor, the management company, House of Connor, the studio, House of Connor, education, House of Connor, blah, blah, and there'll be many subsidiaries under House of Connor.
So you're building an empire.
trying to. Yes.
And would it be safe to say that the thing you're aspiring to more than anything is fuck you money?
Is what?
Fuck you money.
What do you mean by fucking money?
Fuck you money as far as like where you can just do and say whatever the fuck you want because you have enough money that you know everything's going to be okay and it doesn't matter what happens. You can be as outspoken as you want to be.
Yeah. I wouldn't say it would be I can do say whatever I want, but I think it's very different trying to be an activist for change within the community when you're still very much dependent on that industry. Just because, again, I try to be very respectful when I do say stuff. But you never know how someone is going to receive what you're saying, especially if what you're saying and what I'm saying most of the time is true, especially what you're saying is true. because human beings have a natural instinct to protect themselves. So anyone, if somebody says anything against you, your first natural instinct is defense.
Yeah.
You know? Again, fortunately, I haven't been put into a situation to, you know, like even when I said the thing where I said about the studio, the one in Africa, I'm not saying, hey, these are bad people, don't support them. I'm just saying, hey, y'all went to Africa and this don't look like no African movie, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I get what you mean. So, for anyone who's watching this who doesn't follow you, where can they find your social media, your fan sites, if someone's interested in, you know, applying to House of Connor, all that good shit?
Awesome. Okay. So I hate social media. So the only social media that I have is Twitter. And that's Max Connor XXX. You can also find me on OnlyFans. That handle is a little different. It's XL Top. That's XL Top 2. Like, and then just for fans, the number 2.
Okay.
And then just for fans is at Max Connor XXX, the same as the Twitter. I also just started with mini vids, so you can head over to mini vids if you want. Basically, I have that there for people who don't necessarily want to pay a monthly subscription, but want to buy videos a la carte. So that's just simply Max Connor over at mini vids. Anyone interested in applying for a House of Connor? We currently aren't accepting applicants because we're kind of pushing more so towards over to educational management and not so much career management. So we're pushing towards starting workshops and having those conventions and spaces where models can just come and learn and have a space, safe place, have a forum. One of the things that I want to implement that I always wanted to see that we have in the acting world is a gig and tell, a forum simply where performers can go and talk about their experiences working with different companies and different people, and it'd be a safe space to figure out what's safe for me to do, what's safe for me not to do. And have staff, a staff of managers who aren't necessarily there to manage your career, but to guide and give advice, and things like that. Yeah.
Gotcha. And how would you summarize your content on Just for Fans and OnlyFans for someone who's never seen it?
So, a lot of my content is filmed in what I call series, where there's a certain concept and we go with that for a while. Right now, we're kind of stuck into, like, this plant room. So this is one of my filming rooms. Look, you can't really see it right now. Then we also have what I call the neon room, which is very colorful space that I shoot in right back here. It's a very diverse collection. Most of my videos are I don't want to say vanilla, but very clean cut. The way that I film is I try to give a very polished look, but I also try to make it, I call my content polished amateur real sex.
I like that.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Last question. And I ask this to everybody, so don't screw it up.
Okay.
If you could have sex in only two positions for the rest of your life, what two are you picking and why?
Doggy position, because that's just my favorite position. It has very great visuals. And missionary?
Good. Thank you. That's the answer I was looking for.
Yeah. I like missionary just because it's a more personal, intimate position. It is my second favorite, however, simply because I am not a giant. I am a small guy, even though I'm a big, small guy. And so most of the time, if I'm filming a missionary, I can't have that face-to-face intimacy because, like, my face is, like, somewhere around your chest.
Wait, how tall are you?
I'm 5'4".
What the f- Seriously?
Yeah.
I'm 5'4". Everybody thinks I'm, like,
I thought you tall. Were 6 feet at my height. What the?
I'm a little midget. I'm 5'4".
Oh, shit. Okay, now I want to shoot with you even more. Fuck.
Yeah, I'm tiny. That's why I shoot with all those twinks. It makes me look bigger.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Yeah.
Damn. All right. Well, thank you very much for doing this, Max. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate it. It was a really good time.
Max, don't go anywhere. For those of you watching, I really hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you guys all have an absolutely amazing week. Hey guys, just want to say thank you for watching this video, and if you did really enjoy it, I just wanted to mention there are two ways that you can help to support this channel. On the right side, there are three little dots. If you click those, there is a super thanks button, and on the left-hand side, there is a join button where you can join this channel. There are three different tiers of memberships. The top tier does actually allow one-on-one messaging with me via Discord, and I personally answer that. It is not a service. That's just, you know, both of those are ways that you can help support me as a content creator in this channel. I mention this because YouTube is by far the thing that I enjoy doing the most. It's the thing I'm most passionate about. And unfortunately, a lot of the sexual videos, the porn star confessions, the Dom sub, all that stuff, it is not monetized due to the nature of the videos. But either way, thank you so much for taking the time to watch this. I hope you guys all have an absolutely amazing week. I love you all.